And welcome back, everybody. We're talking with Björn Nordström from ofpixlat.info about Sweden, the fantasy of a multicultural society, and of course the potentiality of a coming conflict. I mean, you're in the States right now, Björn, and you, of course, are in a situation now where you're actually better off there due to the fact that you can write about certain things, you can actually talk about certain things in a way that, well, it might still be possible in Sweden, but the fact is we have as we move into next year now, we have a possibility of a new law coming into effect where you basically can be prosecuted in Sweden for having a critical viewpoint on immigration and even politicians and things like that. How do you see Sweden, your home country, as developing, and how do you view it now when you've seen it changed, you know, throughout the years, where you basically are in a situation where you have to fly for, you know, in flight from your own homeland due to the political decisions that are being made in Sweden?
Well, first of all, that new law, I don't understand how that law in one way or the other is healthy for a democratic country, specifically in regards to freedom of speech, freedom of thinking, freedom of opinion, stuff like that. So I don't understand how that law will encourage people to think and express opinions, art as well. So to me, that law is completely contradictory to what a democratic country really needs to thrive. So I think that you're looking at Sweden officially saying, we no longer want to be a democratic country. I think that's really the reality of the law.
Yeah, it's a kind of a totalitarianism.
Absolutely. No doubt about that. If I were to live in Sweden, I would probably think twice to write what I'm writing now. Even though these are my feelings, I would know that in one way or the other, I would lose family or friends, or I would lose my job, or I would get thrown out from a union. And next year, you might go to jail for it. Who knows? So I think it's an extraordinarily dangerous development happening in Sweden right now that I feel a lot of Swedes probably don't understand it because they're so caught up in their naivete around immigration and their fixation on SD, Sverigedemokraterna, that they have lost sight of the bigger picture, which is democracy and freedom of speech. And once you lose sight of those values, you become totalitarian because you're trying to create new laws to stop a certain political party while in the process you're creating the same laws in order to cut down, or basically you're basically losing your democracy and freedom of speech. What I have a lot of friends, literally, I spoke with one just a few days ago who is a citizen of another country as well, Swedish citizen and of a foreign country, and he has a backup plan. And the more people I speak with, the more people are saying, you know what, I'm starting to make a backup plan. The last year, I've heard from probably 10 Swedes in my friendship, within my friendship, who have moved from Sweden, well-educated, following the law-abiding citizen, moving to different parts of the world, North America, Asia, different places, for the only one reason of the developments of Sweden. And I cannot tell you, I get people calling, and they're calling me, emailing me, and contact me on Facebook and Twitter regularly saying the same thing. I want to move too. Can you help me? Or I'm in the process of moving, just to let you know. If you want to write about it, you know, Pixlat.
Yeah.
So I think Sweden not only is facing an uncontrolled immigration, I think that we are starting to face an uncontrolled emigration. And we're not talking about, you know, anybody. We're talking about highly educated or hardworking Swedes who are law-abiding citizens who have given up on their country. We're losing a lot of people to Norway, you know, moving there to work.
Yep.
You know, we're gaining, you know, individuals from third world countries who don't even speak Swedish, have no formal education. And then our own Swedish population who have gone through the entire Swedish school system, they're moving to Norway. Nurses.
God, you know,
in Norway.
Yep.
That's insane. And we're saying now, oh, we're not going to worry about them. We're just going to fill the spots with Somalis or, I don't know, Muslim men, whatever. Whoever's immigrating, they can fill the spots. I mean, that's nuts.
Well, there's actually a record number of people leaving Sweden. This is an article from just a couple of months ago, where in 2013, I think 23,500 women and 27,100 men ended up leaving Sweden. And it's not been that high since the massive amount of Swedes took off to go to America, actually, in the 1880s or so, whenever that was, actually.
And here's the interesting, that's before the 2014 election. I cannot tell you, I've heard from 24 Swedes saying, I'm going to ride out the election, and then I'm going to wait and see what happens. But basically, they're saying, if the election goes to hell, then I'm going to leave. But I want to wait until the election of 2014 and see what happens.
So this obviously means that we're leaving the country, we're giving up on it, the conditions have gotten so bad that what our ancestors toiled in the field for, what we fought with the Danes and the Norwegians for, everything that we accomplished and our ancestors did to hold and preserve and keep that country, we are now just giving it away.
Exactly. And interestingly, ideologically, it fits right into the Swedish mentality, because Swedes are saying, if you have a problem in your home country, migrate, move to Sweden. So, of course, Swedes, you know, the political correct Swede is going to say, well, we don't need you in our country. And if you don't like Sweden as it is or developing, then move to another country. It fits right in, which is kind of fun. I cannot tell you how many times I have heard from politically correct people in Sweden. Now, my people have a different opinion than me. They're saying, oh, I'm glad you live in America. We don't need somebody like you. And I go like, I am well educated. I work hard. I abide to the law. I believe in democracy. I believe in freedom of speech, in freedom of art, in freedom of opinion, all these things. And you don't want me in your country. But instead, you want somebody who's illiterate, who believes that Islam, Sharia should be ruling a country, who believes that women are less than dogs, all these things. Those you want in Sweden instead. And you want to kick me. You don't like me, somebody like me.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, they're saints and you're the devil, Björn, you know?
That, to me, is like, if that's what you want a Saudi Arabia, you want a Somalia, that's what you want. And if you want that, why can't you move there? Why do you have to get that here?
Yeah, well, exactly. They can move there. Now, well, they're going to suck it when the riots come to their neighborhood, you know, and the ethnic conflicts is knocking on their door. I even doubt that it will dawn on them then, to be honest, actually, because they're so... I read an interesting article the other day. It was actually from a social democrat. And he argued that the Swedish Democrat basically controls the entire political debate in Sweden. And he reasoned like this. Due to the fact that all the current, the other seven parties in Sweden are doing everything they can to avoid anything that even comes close to what the Swedish Democrats are doing. That means in a kind of, if the Swedish Democrats play this right, play their cards right, it basically means that they can do to their own policies, paint these other parties into a corner pretty much, which means that the more absurd their policies become, they're going to lose more and more people, because ultimately this is a question of reality. It's not a question of politics or where you stand on this board, which means that this person argued that this basically means that if the Swedish Democrats does it right, they can actually gain a tremendous amount of support for their policies. And it's kind of alluding to that a little bit, isn't it? That actually more and more people are coming over to the Swedish Democrats due to the fact that they see that there is a disconnect between what they see on the TV and what they see on the streets when they go out during the day, you know?
Absolutely. And I think that's what you saw in Canada a while ago. That's why they shifted from the previous government to the current government. Well, they saw the same kind of disconnect between reality and the elite what they were talking about. I just want to mention what you said earlier. You know, when these conflicts come to your front door, I just read an article that in Södermalm now they have hired like some kind of security firm or something to basically keep beggars, keep, you know, I guess immigrants away from Södermalm.
Ah, yeah, of course. Yeah, they'll live behind walls eventually, and they'll still propose it, you know.
At a local lake in not Södermalm, but somewhere in the inner city of Stockholm, where they have 99.9 ethnic Swedes living, very privileged, and all of a sudden a bunch of immigrants showed up, and then all of a sudden the next thing you see police showing up. So they are facing some of that spillover of, oh, all of a sudden we have beggars in Södermalm. Now we have to hire, you know, security officers to clean that out.
Yeah,
I think it shows, it's a great example of that hypocrisy that rules Sweden. We love multiculturalism. We love other cultures as long as they are somewhere else where we don't live.
Yeah, well, they are somewhere else. The world is full of it. You know, so what's the problem? We can just take a flight there. I mean, the complete idiocy here too, because, I mean, first of all, whites overall is a minority in the world, but Swedes are a minority. We are a minority. There are more Somalis in the world than there are Swedes.
Yeah.
So how can this come? It's like they shouldn't talking about, oh, it's a minority. Well, it happens to be a minority in this country, but they already have their own country. It's full of them right there. It's, you know, it's great. Perfect. Let them, you know, live and thrive and do well there. Because what happens here, Björn, as well, is that a lot of the most, you know, from their countries, those who have a little bit of money, they might have had some level of education already. They are fleeing from their own countries, which ultimately, again, in the long term, does a great disservice to the country. If they're seeking to pull themselves out of a third or second world status and attain a level of what the West has, then surely the right way to go is not to uproot those people who have talent and creativity and have a little bit of money and everything else and have them leave. This is going to leave the rest of their countrymen in the dirt, you know?
And that's kind of what I alluded to earlier, and that to me is what Canada, you know, they look at Canada and the United States have a really selecting, restrictive immigration process. They pick like the cherry picking from around the world. But if they're cherry picking from third world countries, let's say that Somali researcher is coming to America, well, they're actually hindering Somalia from improving as a country, like you were saying, because we're just basically taking their best and the brightest.
Yes. But this is not seen as an evil, you know, decision to make.
Yeah, and the interesting thing is when it comes to Sweden, for example, they're saying that, okay, this, you know, whatever ethnic group in Sweden is a minority, they're talking about certain things as within Sweden than other things globally. So they kind of pick and choose how they're defining things. When it comes to, like, defining minorities, oh, then we stay within Sweden. But when it comes to, like, other things, then it's globally.
Yes.
We have global. So it's like sometimes we refer to the world as global when it comes to these things because it benefits our ideology. When it comes to other things like ethnicity or minorities, then we're going to stay within Sweden. Then the global perspective is irrelevant because it's only in Sweden. Sweden only matters then. It's like you're cherry picking. You're picking and choosing your evidence to back up your ideology. You're not being consistent with the way that you're viewing the world. Sometimes the world is global and sometimes it's within Sweden depending on what your ideology, what that calls for, and then you pick in your evidence from there. Does that make sense?
Oh, definitely. Yeah, absolutely. You're making it to fit your cherry picking to fit your image and for the conveniences of proving your point. Yeah, sure.
Like you're saying, you know, there are more Somalis than Swedes, but yet Swedes are a majority right there.
Well, exactly. But look at it though. I mean, because, you know, with all the hate speech laws and everything else, you know, where every conceivable ethnicity is protected under these laws, the ethnic Swedes is not. It's almost like, I mean, I have come to a point where I can't describe it anything else than a self-hatred. It's a resentment and loathing for your own culture, heritage, ancestry, and everything else. I mean, we have the quotes from someone like, you know, Mona Sahlin, in that aspect that she's talking about how much she absolutely resents Swedish culture, talks down on it. We don't have anything. And she's talking to this, you know, Turkish youth organization in, you know, a couple of years ago now, a few more years than that. But, and talking about how silly everything is in Sweden, but she loves everything that's to do with Islam and Muslims, you know?
As long as she doesn't have to live within it. If she loves it. So, I mean, if you love Islam, why don't you move, as a woman, why don't you move to Saudi Arabia? Why do you have to live in Sweden and bring Saudi Arabia to Sweden? If you love Muslims so much in Saudi Arabia, move to Saudi Arabia. You know, I'd rather live in America than Sweden, so I do that. I'm not trying to take America and put it in Sweden and make Sweden into America.
Yeah.
So if you promote a certain thing, you have a choice in a global world. You're basically saying, and here's the hypocrisy again, Mona Sahlin is saying, you know, I love, you know, the Muslim world so much more. Well, you know what? Then you can go there. If you are for global migration because you claim you are, then that, why should that mean that global migration only happens from the Muslim world to Sweden? Why couldn't it be you then migrating to Saudi Arabia?
Yeah.
That'd be great. Because to you, you're defining Muslim, I mean, I'm sorry, global migration to you is only actually one way. It's not Swedish women moving to Muslim countries. It's really about getting Muslim men moving to Sweden. That's global migration. If it's migration, it should be all which, you know, every which way you want.
Yeah, exactly. It's it's tremendously, the double standards, of course, are immense and enormous. But as more and more we look at this, I mean, if we look at the influx, of course, of all other conceivable ethnicities into the Western world and Europe in specifically, it seems to me that there is a concerted effort because there's no imposing of trying to get. See, the only problem when this arises, in the same way when you saw, you know, white flight in America and London, for example, the majority of whites have left in the last 10 years. I think it was 600,000, if I have that number correct, that left. And a reason, yep. Other recent article from out of Portland in Oregon stated that Portland was too white, so they had to bring in, you know, more immigrants into the city because apparently there is a problem when there are too many white people in any kind of city or neighborhood, or in our case, in a whole country. But there doesn't seem to be a problem when there's a lot of Africans in Africa or a lot of Asians in Asia, for example. So what is that about? Because if we look at the Article 2 of the Convention of what defines genocide, Björn, it actually is stated under, you know, C and D in that clause that, you know, if any of the acts are committed that are intended to destroy in whole or in part a national and racial or religious groups, and if that entails of actually calculating bringing about the physical destruction in whole or in part, then that clarifies as genocide during the United Nations convention. Because if we look at if we propel the numbers forward, if we look at the replacement level of migration, the low birth rates of white Europeans and the massive birth rates in comparison with usually other ethnicities and, you know, Islam in particular and stuff like that, this is something that down the line, 2, 3, 4 generations, going to lead that, white ethnic Europeans are going to become minorities in their own country. It's just a matter of mathematics and facts, you know?
What I think is interesting, and I think we're seeing in California there right now, I think I read in the paper just a few weeks ago that for the first time, whites are a minority in California. I don't know if you read that.
Yeah, sure did. Yeah.
So now that kind of turns the table on a lot of things. In other words, is the white population now an official minority that has to be protected in the U.S. the same that other minorities are protected? So how do you deal with that? So it becomes very interesting from many different perspectives, including the legal perspective, because all of a sudden you're facing a situation that you've never seen before, and laws that were created in the past with a certain division of ethnic groups in mind, all of a sudden, when the division is completely different, how are the laws going to hold up? Are they still going to apply or not?
I think they're not going to apply it because
it's interesting.
It is interesting. I mean, it's like, what do you think is going to happen here too? Let's kind of look ahead a little bit more here, because we talked earlier, we have issues of, for example, how we raise our children in Sweden as part of the problem. There's I believe, an intentional pacification for good or for bad. The type of government that we had in Sweden, which was very protective, was an immense, you know, welfare system in place. It was a security network that was admired around the world. This is, of course, as we detail, crumbled now, but nonetheless, that's been in place. That has created, in my view, a type of psychology that now you see the negative sides of it. In other words, we're allowing ourselves and our culture and our heritage to be destroyed, and we're completely run over as we have a very skewed gender politics happening as well, with state feminism breaking up the gender roles, attacking, you know, the family unit, or specifically the white male, etc., and all these kinds of ideas, which in my view kind of leads to, again, a concerted effort to try to break up and try to create these conditions within the country, because this is ultimately an attack on the Swedish people. Björn, how do you view this?
Well, I think the best example I can come up with is, you know, Swedish women has under many years, you know, achieved a fairly decent level of equality, probably maybe the most equal country in the world, I think, for many years. And now you have cultures that are viewing women as less than dogs, you know, basically, you know what they are. They are growing in Sweden now, that culture. So now what's rooted in Sweden is our cultures that places that do not recognize equality at all for women. quite the opposite. Women should be submissive, and, you know, like I said, lower level than dog in the pecking order. So what I don't understand is how, on the one hand, you're going to be able to uphold the previous cultural values that women have fought for so many years, like equality for women, while at the same hand, you're bringing in cultures in large numbers, a culture in large numbers that doesn't recognize it, it's not tolerant towards women whatsoever. And how are you going to be able to reconcile those two opposing forces in one country? I don't know. I don't get it.
Yeah, the feminists seem to love this. They don't have any problem with this. In fact, they prefer it over Swedish men, it seems like.
That's a great hypocrisy. They turn their backs to that, because I do think on an intellectual level, they understand the extreme conflict between those opposing values. But on the other hand, because of, you know, being, if you point that out, you're racist or Islamophobe or something like that, then nobody dares speaking up about it. So what I'm saying is that's heading in a direction where I believe, unfortunately, women in Sweden over time will lose a lot of the ground that they have gained for so many years, simply because cultures are imposing their values, which are women intolerant and women unfriendly towards women, more and more in the Swedish society. So I think women in Sweden, if I were a woman in Sweden, I'd be scared to death.
I agree. Do you think they're going to bow to this due to the fact that you have a, I mean, let's face it, the neutrality, the de-bald Swedish male that exists right now due to the conditions, as I mentioned, of how we're being raised and too much of an overprotective kind of mommy and poppy type of government has now created the conditions where we have new incoming people who are very strong in their beliefs, very very adamant and very ferocious in the way that they're seeking to impose this upon Swedish people. Are people going to respond to this in a way that people respond to strength? They're going to say, oh, great, this is fine, we love it. Are we going to see a conversion rate over to Islam, for example, of a lot of Swedes?
I don't know. I don't think Swedes really want to do that, because I think it's deeply rooted in the Swedish culture and among individuals to be fairly secular, atheist or secular. And I don't think Swedes want to become Muslims. But I do believe that pressure is mounting, that more and more that Swedes, one way or the other, needs to either convert or deal with that issue. Either say enough is enough, stop it, or you convert, because Swedes don't like conflicts. So the easiest way to avoid conflict is become a Muslim, then you avoid the conflict. Right?
Yeah.
And Swedes are very good at conflicts. So I think that Swedes might choose to convert to avoid conflict, but I do believe and hoping eventually somebody's going to stand up or a large group going to stand up and say, look, the honor violence you're bringing in needs to stop. The inequality between women and men in your culture needs to stop. We have a culture, and here's where we are. I think we have to go back to square one at some point and start defining what does equality between the genders mean? What does it mean to be a democracy, to have freedom of speech? I think Sweden has to redefine some basic concepts, some basic values. Because right now, I don't think Swedes know what the heck they're talking about. When they talk about democracy, it's certainly not democracy. When they talk about freedom of speech, as long as they don't have a say-so, I think Sweden has to sit back and start redefining a constitution. I wouldn't be surprised if at some point a politician or a party starts saying, we need to rewrite the constitution and redefining it and start enforcing the constitution through a judicial system or something that is impartial and that's completely objective and doesn't care about political correctness. I think that we really have to get down to that point at some point.
Well, this is, of course, a catharsis that we're going through now on a massive scale here, that there is a pathology within our system. There's kind of an infection, a disease, really, within the value system. I would say that it's a lack of values. There really isn't anything there. The neutrality that we've been known for now shows its ugly, you know, flip side here, where we've voluntarily, to a certain extent, have given up our culture. It's you know, kind of petered out into nothing at all. And the fact is that we have to, sorry, Björn, to finish the point here. The fact is we have to start facing the very aspect that there are conflicts and that they are part of the world. As you said before, we've been isolated from it, but we will not be able to take that anymore. We have to realize that we at some point have to stand up not only to ourselves, but to our families, to our children, to the rest of our fellow Swedish people, you know?
Absolutely. And I think Swedes have been pretty happy that we were able to phase out Christianity as the ruling power of the country. I'm not saying Christianity is gone, but it's no longer a force in politics, right? And I think Swedes are pretty happy about being secular and atheist, going like, okay, we've separated church from state. And now we're seeing Islam growing. And now all of a sudden, Islam is like the talking point. It seems like in every freaking situation, Islam comes up. I don't think that your typical Swede is very excited having to deal with religion, not Christianity in this case, because Christianity is certainly lame in the eye of a Swede.
Sure, yeah.
The Swede is really happy about having Islam being a talking point in seemingly every single situation today. I really don't believe that's a Swedish way, because it certainly is something that Swedes are happy with religion being separated from the state, finally. Seeing religion growing as a political force or as a force in society, that should scare any Swede to death, and especially Islam with everything that entails. That's even more scarier. Would you ever believe that we would encourage Christianity to be a growing force in Sweden? No, never, never. That'd be ridiculous.
Yeah. No, I know, but at the same time, it feels like this, you know, the pathology of modernity to a certain extent that we've had, this secular viewpoint is, we've had that for such a short time. I mean, I look in things from a larger scale usually, and I also have a tendency to believe that, sure, individually we might have certain preferences and choices, but whether we like it or not, human nature and the way that things are, you know, constructed, it seems like we do have a larger kind of psyche of the people, for the lack of a better word. We do have our, you know, archetypal mythologies with different people within Europe even. And I mean, we have a strong history of having, you know, Viking tradition. We've had heroism in our past. We've had warrior tendencies. And to a certain extent is that, sure, we've gone secular, but this has been a kind of a process really that has been imposed on us, I feel, to a certain extent. And the question is, how do we relate to things now when there begins to be threats posed against us? Is there aspects of our own culture and heritage eroded way back, maybe even in pre-Christianity, that we can awaken, that we can realize that we have a very strong foundational, you know, system here and heritage and culture? Because I think a lot of it goes back to that, because I think when we don't have that anchor there, Björn, that's when we start to lose it. We don't have any kind of no solid ground to stand on. And I think it's that very tendencies that have created the situation and the follies that we find ourselves in now. How do you view that?
I agree with you. You mentioned the key word anchor. Swedes have no anchor. They have nothing, like you're saying, nothing to hang on to. We are confused. We're a confused country. And then all of a sudden you have Islam moving in great force with great numbers into Sweden. We don't know how to respond to that. All we're seeing is that everything is extremely different than it used to be. And from a rational standpoint, everything with Islam goes against everything in Sweden. It's just how it goes. And I think that Swedes are very confused right now. That's what I was saying, that we might have to take a step back and say, look, we need to start redefining. Is this what we want? Do we want to have Islam a growing force in Sweden that sooner or later, just a matter of time, until they have a powerful impact on Swedish society in every which way, including political? Or do we decide to say, look, we cannot let this happen. We need to go back and see, okay, what built Sweden? Why were we successful? What was some of the cause for success? And we need to go back and figure out how did that happen?
Yeah.
And again, you're saying anchor. We don't have an anchor right now. We are totally anchorless, floating in space, kind of just, you know, you throw up a feather of a bird and it's going to blow with the wind. That's what we're doing. And if Islam comes in, which is extremely determined to do what it takes to establish Islam and the Muslim culture, then Sweden has nothing to really counter that at all whatsoever. There's nothing to like put up there's not even a stop sign or
no.
Not even like a, you know, hey, slow down.
Well, see, since the Swedish Democrats are for restricting immigration, none of the other parties can share that opinion politically, right?
And I think if you have a nation, this is where it's so messed up with Swedish politics. If you have there's such a fixation around the Swedish Democrats now that every politician, every party, their focus is on the Swedish Democrats. They have lost sight of our horrible school systems. They have lost sight of the welfare programs in ruins. They have lost sight of our healthcare falling apart. Their only focus is the Social Democrats. And I feel like, where is the vision for a future? Our only vision now is multicultural. Is that a vision? No, this is not a vision.
No.
There's no vision. All we're talking about is multiculturalism and how to stop the Swedish Democrats from gaining more popularity. And I think if you have your two goals, one, multiculturalism, two, stopping another party, if those are your only political points that you're kind of building your entire party on, you have a messed up party. And because all those seven parties in power are the same, then you have a messed up country. You cannot thrive as a country with that kind of ideology running you, where your goal is to establish multiculturalism, not knowing why, it's just going to happen that way. And secondly, opposing a party because you hate them.
Yeah, exactly. Well, I mean, I thought we were for tolerance. I thought we were for the diversity of opinions and everything else, right? But it seems it's only applicable in one direction. It goes back to the cultural Marxist ideology of one-way tolerance. It's really like, this is what it has to be, and that's the tolerance, but then you have an opposing opinion to that. You know, we'd rather oust you from other country and throw you out or put you in jail, as they're doing now, than to hear your point of view, you know?
That's what I was commenting on earlier when you said about that new law, and then I said we have lost sight of the bigger picture. We're so obsessed with the Swedish Democrats and their politics that we're creating laws that are contradictory to democracy and freedom of speech and freedom of opinion and all these things, that we're really turning into totalitarian society, which you were mentioning, for the simple reason that we're focused on one political party and we have lost sight of the bigger picture, what it means to be a democracy with free speech, freedom of opinion, those kind of freedoms that we have forgotten. And I think the U.S. is in a better place that way, because the U.S. at least have a fairly sound constitution that you can go back and say, hey, look, I got a First Amendment at least. You can't really just make those laws that's going to violate my First Amendment. It's not perfect, but I think there's a stronger anchor and stronger foothold in the U.S. than in Sweden around that.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, if they're going to continue to deny reality, we are dead in the water, as you mentioned. I think that it's going to get a lot worse before it gets in any capacity kind of better. But I think if we face the facts there and the long-term strategy of what to do about this kind of situation, I think that this is going to lead to a revised scenario where we basically, at some point along the way, we're going to have someone coming along and suggesting and basically appealing to people on this level, where they're going to realize that, you know, what has to be done and what we have to do and everything else. So although it's a catharsis kind of period, I think that out of that kind of chaos, I think something really positive can actually come out of it. And we might come out, I hope, stronger than we are now, you know?
If you look at some of the countries that were in chaos, like Iraq and I don't know, Afghanistan, some of these countries, right? What is one of the first things that they have done? They still got major problems, right? One of the first things they did was to write a constitution, right?
Yeah.
Even though there are a lot of problems, they felt like we need to write some form of constitution. When the United States was formed, what was the first things they did? They wrote a constitution. And I think Sweden is at the point, we'll come to a point where they go like, we have to revisit our constitution and strengthen it.
Well, we don't really have one. We have Grundlag, which is like a foundational law, but it isn't really a constitution, you know?
I'm not sure what that is, I'll be honest with you. I know the Grundlag, but I'm not sure exactly what it means. But what I'm saying is, maybe like you're saying, and I'm glad you're bringing that up, because there might be silver lining here, that we're actually to the point that we go like, we need to, we hate the United, you know, obviously Swedes, you know, some Swedes, the leftists hate the United States, but they might say, you know what? They have a strong constitution. They got that one thing that will kind of bind the country together in one way or the other and be an anchor in a way that we don't have. Maybe it's time for us to sit down and write a constitution in the very same way. Maybe we need to get worse in order to figure that out. I don't know. But I think it's a good point you're making that, you know, things are going to get worse, but it might not be the end of it.
Sure. No, I don't think so either. I think Swedish people aren't going to give up without a fight, but a lot of horrible things is going to occur and go down before that. I mean, and I'm going to talk a little bit more about that here in a little bit. But so basically, does it, I don't want to kind of overinterpret your solution issue here, but Does it all hinge on a piece of paper, or is it really the realization, though, in people's mind, their own kind of individual's, you know, psyche that needs to you know, walk into reality and out from their, you know, sticking their head in the sand? What is it really about here, do you think?
Ideally, I think it should be occurring inside of people's heads. They should realize that we are in a messed up place, a really messed up place. But apparently, it's not occurring in enough heads to make a change, for people to realize, oh, we're making a law that's going to really cut down on the freedom of speech and the democracy. People are just going like, oh, it's going to stop people from, you know, that's going to oppose the Swedish Democrats. I think we're doing things for the wrong reason. But I do believe with a piece of paper, the point of a piece of paper, and that's the point of the American Constitution, is if I say something and you infringe or try to stop me from saying it, at least I can go to court and I can say, look, I have the right to say this. And it's up to hopefully an objective, neutral judge to decide if that's the case or not. And I believe that piece of paper has a value because it's not really a piece of paper. It's a value system.
Well, that's what Obama's saying, right? And all the rest of the presidents then said, it's just a piece of paper. They've been really happy to tear that thing apart, I think, you know?
I believe that. I feel it's a value system, not just a piece of paper.
Yeah. No, of course not. I agree with that. It represents something, an idea, something that that people should adhere to. I agree with that, definitely. But nonetheless, without the realization of people, and again, we can see this in America too, I think, that even though the Constitution is there, they're continuously... people, companies, politicians that are in violation of the Constitution, and it just goes under the radar, you know? So what does it really mean? I mean, we have to have a people that are vigilant, and Americans certainly have been more than, I think, other Europeans for some time. They've been kind of pacified now, I guess, but to a certain extent, it's the people's responsibility to hold their elected leaders responsible for what they're doing, you know?
Of course, absolutely. The one thing that I can give is an example, whether you like her or not, Pamela Geller, right? You can be for her, you can be against her, it doesn't matter. She, though, has proven that the Constitution is working because she put up some advertisement on buses in San Francisco, trains in Washington, D.C., buses in New York, Chicago, I believe, too, that could be offensive to a lot of people. I don't know if you heard about that.
Oh, sure, yeah.
But the point is, you know, people wanted to stop it. Some people wanted to stop it. And she went back and sued whoever refused to put them up and sued them based claiming her First Amendment rights, her freedom of speech. And she ended up winning. So whether you like her or you hate her, it's not the point. The point is that she had somewhere she can go and say, look, I have the right to freedom of speech. It's protected by the Constitution. I can do this. And it was upheld. And in that way, I feel there's a security of, okay, yeah, a lot of things fly under the radar. I get that. But if you are alert and you are picking your fights and you stand up for yourself and you really protect your rights, I think there is a safety net for you with the Constitution that will help you as opposed to Sweden, where there might not be the same safety net.
Definitely. Now, one of the bigger issues here is not only, of course, that our coffers are being looted and emptied as old people in our country who has... worked their entire lives to help build what we do have today, are starving in their homes. We are taking in so many people that we basically can't, you know, take care of them. There are people living in conditions who come in that are horrible as well. I mean, even camping trailers are being rented out. It's turned into actually quite of a lucrative industry in Sweden to be, for example, a lawyer that represents asylum seekers, or if you have some kind of realty that you can rent out and everything else. It's turned into a massive money machine, this whole thing. But beyond those issues, and we can certainly talk more about that as well, we've had a tremendous increase in violence and crime in Sweden that seems to correlate almost identically and perfectly with the immigration statistics. And specifically, Björn, we have the issue of rape statistics that are just skyrocketing. What will it take for people? Because I've actually heard from people who, again, stick their heads in the sands, they deny it, it's not that, they claim it's not related to immigration, and this is partly due to the fact that we don't racially carry that statistics in the reports and everything else. Although I know from some people who have actually gone through individually the police reports and looked at the names specifically, like Ingrid Karlqvist did in Malmö, for example. But I've actually heard from people who basically, they justify this kind of behavior, and they say it's all right, it's whatever. They refuse to look at it because what it means is that it points to a problem with the situation. What will it take? I mean, if we look at something that's so severe as the rape statistics in Sweden, epidemic, what will it take for people to really wake up to this and realize the incredible you know, problems that arise out of so-called multiculturalism, you know?
Well, I think, you know, as far as rape, you like to think that, you know, Sweden is now the highest occurrence of rapes in the Western world, and I think only after Lesotho and South Africa. And you like to think that the feminist movement would be all over that, but they've turned their back to that too, which is kind of another hypocrisy they're involved with. But I do believe that if you are, like Sweden has done, has been a society fairly, and I'm not generalizing, but fairly has had a low rate of rapes among, you know, rapes happen and it's horrible, but Swedes have not been a raping culture. It's just how it goes.
Yeah.
Some individuals rape, I get that, and that's an individual issue we have to deal with. But as a culture, the Swedish culture is not a raping culture. When you bring in cultures from other nations that are raping cultures that we know are where rape is sanctioned by the state, even in some cultures, then you bring that to Sweden in mass numbers. Well, what can you expect to get? You're going to expect the same type of behaviors, especially if you are not putting down your foot and punishing the criminals doing it. Because right now, many of those rapists, gang rapists, they go to trial and they are being acquitted.
Yeah, very lenient, the punishment. Yeah.
And of course, what you're saying as a country, well, it's okay to rape, go ahead and do it. And I think that our culture of being lenient as far as crime goes against other cultures, because other cultures look at our Swedish culture as weak. Oh, Swedes, I can rape somebody in Sweden, I get like 3 months. At the most, not even in jail, like summer service, like community service.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
Right? That's a weak country. They look at it as a weak country because they don't even punish criminals. That's a weak country.
Yep.
You know, and which it might be. But it worked in the past because Sweden didn't have a problem with gang rapes or rape. Sweden didn't have a rape issue.
Yeah.
A major rape problem. And now they do. But we have not adjusted our legal codes to deal with a rape issue that we have. And especially you add to that, like I said, the feminist movement that's turning their back to the rape problems, because if we're to scrutinize who's doing the rapes, it's not going to be primarily ethnic Swedes. Yes, ethnic Swedes do rape women, but it's not a cultural phenomenon. This is what Swedes don't understand, a lot of Swedes. They can't distinguish between an individual and a cultural phenomenon, right?
Right, yeah.
So what I'm saying is ethnic Swedes do rape, but it's not a cultural phenomenon. There are cultures where rape is part of the culture and it's sanctioned by the state. So they are coming in with that already ingrained in their DNA because it's what they are used to, what they are allowed to do in their home country.
Well, and this speaks more about, specifically this, the Swedes who don't, it speaks more about their kind of relationship to culture, because again, due to theirs being eroded due to theirs being not, you know, imposed with a value system or anything like that, they have a tendency to believe that everyone is like them, right? And that's one of the big problems we're faced, that it's like, not, I mean, we're taught equality and egalitarianism, we're all the same, we're all equal and everything else, and I think that that's one of the biggest lies that we've ever been taught, Björn, because this actually is creating this situation where we believe that everyone has the same value systems as yourself, or that they are going to adhere, yep, and respond to things, if it's crime and punishment or whatever, in the same capacity and way that you do. And that's just not the case. It's just not the reality that these people are living in, you know?
Culture is extraordinarily deeply rooted. It doesn't matter what it is. Culture is something that you can go through generations living in a foreign country, but your culture might still be exactly the same within your family, core family, or your core multicultural community. The culture might never change. We look at the honor culture in certain communities. That doesn't, because you cross the border, it still exists. Generation after generation, culture exists. You can change borders, you can change nationalities, you can change a lot of things, but the culture is extraordinarily difficult, if not impossible, to change. And we've seen that. I mean, you see it in America, you see it in Canada, and you see it in Sweden. Because you cross the border, the same culture, whether it's positive or destructive, will remain the same. And unfortunately, Sweden is allowing an enormous number of individuals from very destructive cultures to cross the border. And that's why I'm saying that women equality in Sweden is in jeopardy, not because of Swedish men that get the blame, because they were the one helping establishing it, but because of foreign cultures that view women as worse than dogs. They are imposing their cultures onto Swedes who have no anchor culture to fight back. And I think you know what I'm talking about.
Yeah, oh, definitely. Well, I mean, these people even deny that gender exists. I mean, I've actually even heard like Feminist Initiative, the leader, whatever you call it in Sweden, in English, the Gudrun Schyman, you know, on an interview that she actually is denying the biological reality of gender. I mean, so how in the hell are we going to convince these people that culture, you know, exists to them? Because to them, again, it's a blank slate, right? It's nothing about genetics. There's nothing to do with the thousands of years of multiple, of thousands of generations living in a certain way, right? Everyone is a blank slate, and Marxism has forever been trying to uproot culture and the things that actually are imposed on us for the sake of imposing their social constructs upon everyone, right? So, I mean, again, it's a battle, as I see it, of reality versus fantasy, really, when it boils down to it, you know?
Well, I would love to see Gudrun Schyman and her apostles go to like a Muslim man, a patriarchal or imam or something, and say, hey, you're not a man, you're a hen, right? I would love to see the response.
Yeah.
Because looking at, they are able to do that within Sweden, targeting white Swedish men. That's really what they're doing. But they never have the same courage or guts and target other cultures with the same types of comments. Swedes are the rapists. Swedes are the hens. Everything's the Swedes is with the Swedish men. But if you look at internationally, Swedish men are the most equal, least probably one of the most tolerant people in the world. Yet they're getting the blame for everything. And then you have other cultures who are proven through studies to be much more intolerant than Sweden and are much more patriarchal than Swedish men. They are getting a free pass on everything. And that to me is a great hypocrisy that we live in.
Has this then, Björn, now been proven, or has this been shown now then to be the mistake that we made, that this was the way that, you know, the issues that we're talking about, the problems got its you know, foot in the door, and then the rest kind of expanded from there? Or what do we blame it on, if we can blame it on anything? Have we been too, and I'm not trying to say that we should be, you know, violent or evil or harsh towards people or never, everything else, but the leniency, the it's a weakness to a certain extent that does exist there, that has ultimately, as I see it anyway, kind of allowed certain things to occur, and this has now consequently led to a domino effect where Swedish men haven't stood up in time and said, no, this is it. We're not taking anymore. This is going to, I mean, and organizing, banding together, making sure that the political system changes. It's that, I mean, we're cowering to words. That's ultimately what it boils down to. We are afraid, or they are afraid, of being called certain things, and therefore they run into the corner and cry like a little boy, you know?
Yeah, I think, you know, I can just compare that. If you were to, there's no study about this, but I'm fairly confident in this. If you were to compare the quote-unquote manhood around the world, right? I don't think you're going to find the manhood in Sweden among men. Swedish men are great in many ways, but you're not going to find the manhood, in other words, men who are in a large number, in big numbers, willing to stand up and say, stop raping our women. We had enough of this crap. Okay, you're not going to find that. I can see that in other countries, but not in Sweden. I believe that the Marxist, the communistic viewpoint and ideology being banged into Swedes' heads for so long, and the feminist hammers in media has over time, you know, had its effect on Swedish men and Swedes in general. You were saying earlier, you know, about the hen and stuff, and I've been talking to American and Canadian friends I have, males, and I've asked them, and they go, you're nuts.
Yeah, of course.
Superstar. They go like, I'm a man. I'm a man. You know, and in Sweden, if you're going to say, I'm a man, that's like frowned upon. You're like, oh, you can't say you're a man. That's right. Like ridiculous. Here in America, you still, a man is allowed to be a man. A woman can be a woman. And so be it. But in Sweden, that you kind of, that Marxist communistic approach has been very systematically removing things from the Swedish culture, from Sweden, Swedes' DNA. I don't know what, but it's
That I don't think that's just it. I think that the social engineers and the type of kind of propaganda and the type of conditioning that has occurred within the society of the erosion of human nature has been imposed on us. I mean, as I said before, I think that this is actually something that is still within our biology. They haven't managed to change that in just a couple of generations for as long as they've had power. I think it's rather something that has been suppressed, and they have to continue to suppress it with propaganda. But once that cat's out of the bag, I think there's a tremendous and a ferocious energy that actually lies under that, Björn.
I think a lot of men, for politically correctness reasons, kind of participate in this charade, but deep down they go like, this is screwed up.
Of course they do.
I look at it as Pavlov's dog. You know Pavlov's dog, right?
Yeah, conditioning, yeah.
Ring the bell and, you know, that kind of stuff. Well, Pavlov's dog, you can train and do certain, but the dog is still a dog, right?
Yep.
Deep down, it's still a dog. It's a ferocious creature. It's an animal that with animalistic instincts. You can train a Swede to behave in certain ways, but once you push the buttons too much, you go past certain limits.
Exactly.
People are going to say, you know, enough is enough. I am no longer going to be, you know, soon enough, what's the next trend? Everybody has to be homosexual. Everybody
sure.
has to be.
Yeah, why not, right?
What's the new trend? At some point, it's like, I am not going to sleep. That's my preference. I don't want to sleep with another man because that's my preference.
Well, that proves you're a homophobe then, Björn.
Exactly. But what I'm saying is that's insane. But at some point, people are going to have to stand up and say, look, I don't mind. People can sleep with whoever they want. I couldn't care less, but I can choose who I want to sleep with. And you need to respect that. But people don't stand up and say that.
Well, not yet. And much more than that needs to occur. Yeah. And this is going to create a hardened faction within the country that is going to be willing to stand up and defend what they're seeing is being lost right now. Which is, of course, an interesting development. But in terms of politics and in terms of a possibility of a way out, because I've been thinking about this a little bit too, and part of me is thinking, let's just kind of exaggerate whatever is occurring now with 1,000 so that the reaction will be stronger and so that something will actually occur here. Because what I'm saying is that this could kind of peter out as well. This could be something that kind of slowly just, you know, consumes the country and you know, male after male and generation after generation, it just kind of, you know, suffocates it slowly as opposed to getting a strong reaction that puts its foot down and say, enough is enough. What do you think is the way out here to kind of create, in your view, the best possible way out of the situation we find ourselves in?
Well, like I said earlier in the conversation we had, I think Canada, not as extreme example, but I think is a fairly decent example because it kind of followed the same path as Sweden, but not near as extreme, ended up with a very strong leader who kind of tapped into the innermost values and beliefs in Canadians. And that kind of changed politics in Canada quite a bit the last, since 2006. And I think that's what needs to happen in Sweden as well. Somebody who's tapping in, I think Jimmy Åkesson seems to be that person who can really tap into the core beliefs of human beings, whether it's love or hate, but he's tapping into something that other politicians can't tap into. And I do believe there are many more Swedes who actually have those core beliefs aligned with the values of democracy, protecting freedom of speech, protecting equality for women, being tough on crime, and I don't care if it's social democrats or anybody or another party claiming those, that's not the point, but those are the core beliefs, the values that you hold. And I don't believe the values that are being promoted in media today are the values of most Swedes. I really don't, but you jump on the bandwagon because you don't want to be accused of being a racist or Islamophobe or being a homophobe, whatever.
Well, that's what people have to overcome and just say, whatever, exactly. Whatever, screw that. I don't care.
Exactly. And the reason why the Social Democrats grow so much, they do grow in Sweden, is because more people dare speaking out and come out, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And again, the Canadians follow the same path. I knew Canadians back in the year 2000, several years before Harper, who were not to the extreme of Sweden, but who were concerned about, well, that's not politically correct, or, you know, this is what the media is telling us, but that kind of stuff. That's changed. Now the media has changed as well. The media is now reporting things very differently than 15 years ago in Canada. So I do think there are some positive things to look at that I believe can happen with a strong leader. And I'm not, you know, but I think it should be focusing on values and, you know, core values and beliefs. Don't worry too much, you know. Yes, you have politics that you have to kind of frame everything around, but I think we have to keep talking about democracy. What is democracy? Start really scrutinize what democracy means. Freedom of speech. Those core values have to be investigated and scrutinized much more, because you can't, you can always argue and disagree on politics. But if you start disagreeing on a core value of freedom of speech and say, we don't need freedom of speech, well, you're looking at an argument with a totalitarian state then. And really have a problem.
And a lot of people would see, this is what I've come to the conclusion of when we look at, for example, how you know, Henrik Rundqvist and Dan Park have been treated and what happened to them there. It actually turns out that they're actually not against totalitarianism. It's just, as long as it's their version and they're on, you know, in top of the political elite or in favor of what the policies are of the government, then they seem to be perfectly fine with it, actually.
But I do believe over time, given another election, you know, the next election period between now and 2018, I do believe a larger group in Sweden is going to make wake up and realize how screwed up it is. I mean, I have friends now. I have friends who 6 months ago would never, ever, ever go out and say anything negative about the leftist media or about immigration or anything. And all of a sudden, a friend sends me a link from Exponerat. Oh, Pixlan says, I never knew about this. Oh my God, is this the reality? What happens? Or somebody might say, who I thought was a leftist. I had a friend a few weeks ago. I thought it was a leftist. You know, out of the, you know, we chatted briefly a few times the last several years. Just came out and said, the damn leftist media in Sweden is ruining the country. And I go like, oh my God, I thought you were a leftist all along. That's why we haven't had any contacts. And he was like, right. I'm just tired. I had enough of it. I'm done.
Yeah.
So what I'm saying is, I think people had enough. It's come to a point now where people have had enough. Right. And we're going to experience that more, I think, after this next election.
Well, to be honest, these folks are very late to the party, but I hope for their children's sake that they're not too late. And by the way, folks, I'll link up the interview that we did with Ricardo Duchesne, the professor there at New Brunswick, as well, for a more in-depth view on Canadian multiculturalism. And check that out as well, and see if you agree as well with what Björn was saying about their model of what they have there. But Swedish Democrats, 2014, the election is coming up. Are there any, as far as you see it, Björn, any problems that exist within the policies of the party? If you could criticize anything that they have, what would that be?
Education. I actually wrote a in Krönika for Pixlat about 6 months ago, 4 months ago, about their education. I feel they're lacking a lot in educational policy. And I have contacted, not only do I believe their understanding of education is not the greatest, I have also contacted their representatives who are their spokespeople for education. And I don't think I got the type of response I was hoping. I feel like I have a lot to contribute because I have experiences with education that very few Swedes actually have. And I felt like they kind of ignored my experiences and my invitation for a conversation and sharing of ideas. So I feel like education is a major issue of Swedish politics, but I don't believe any Swedish party, not even the Swedish Democrats, is capable or in a good position now to actually deal with education. I think that's hugely lacking.
All right, very good. Well, thank you so much for your time today, Björn. Please give us the details where people can follow you and your writing. And if there's anything else you'd like to leave us with, please go ahead.
No, I go by my real name on Facebook, Björn Nordström, BjørnNordström. And I go by my real name on Twitter as well, Björn Nordström, so I can be easily found there. And if you go into Pixlat, you can find me right there. So I shouldn't be any problem getting a hold of somebody want to reach me and chat and whatever. Be a friend on Facebook. It's always nice to make new friends. So.
All right. Very good. We'll have the links up there. And of course, of pixlat.info site that seems to be growing all the time as well. A lot of people are getting aboard on some of the issues, of course, that they deal with over there. So very good stuff. Thank you so much for coming on, Björn. Keep up the good work, and maybe we can do it again in the future.
Absolutely. Thank you for having me.
And before we wrap things up here, I believe I mentioned that America used to be 98% white. Well, as I was looking this up afterwards, It seems it was more like 90% to 92%. So just a quick correction on that for the sake of accuracy. Nonetheless, it shows an incredible change in demographics in just 50 years. All right, folks, we have much more coming with Daniel Updike, Gordon Kennedy, Nora Gedgaudas, the Joy Camp guys, Kai Merles, and many, many more. Thank you for staying with us, and thank you for your membership. Have a great rest of your day or evening, wherever you are, and we'll speak more soon. Take care.